This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Scherzo cuts back, fires the shot, and it's in! It falls to Ely on the volley! Cross him to Namath, and he touches it in!
Presented by 360 Vodka. Raise a glass to spring at the Holiday Distillery, where you'll learn the incredible story of Casey's oldest business and experience real Missouri bourbon being made. Tours are only $10 and include tasting to those 21 and up. Book now at holidaydistillery.com.
Now your host, Nate Buchady.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We appreciate you listening to us live on the air or listening to the podcast wherever and whenever you might be, whether that's on the 810 app, whether that's online at 810WHB.com or on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you listening. My name's Nate Buchady, joined as always by the one and only Carter Augustine. Carter, how are you today, man?
Yeah, doing great, Nate. Just trying to keep the mood up despite all this rainy weather.
Steal a line from my morning show host, Stephen St. John, it's raining cats and dogs. I hope you don't step in a poodle. We're off and running. Nothing. You just tried not to even respond to that. I understand. I respect that.
No, good.
It is a soggy Kansas City right now. And it may be a little soggy feelings for Sporting KC after that game against Vancouver over the weekend. Sporting looked like they had their first win since March 30th. They certainly feel like I think they deserved to get their first win. But in stoppage time, in the final seconds of the game, Vancouver able to pull one back and get a 1-1 draw out of Sporting Kansas City. So a frustrating one for SKC that we will break down. One, though, that I think at least the team really focusing on the positives from that performance that they can build on trying to turn this thing back around. We'll discuss that. We will preview the upcoming big match against Seattle on Sunday at 5 o'clock. Of course, Carter and I will be on the call, the radio broadcast for that game right here on Sports Radio 810. And we're going to have a couple of special guests on the show as well, as Gianluca Busio will sit down for a nice long-form interview about his experience with the U-17s at the CONCACAF Championships. And then we're going to talk with the kit man, Mike Flaherty, as well. He always has good stories to tell. So we'll chat with kit man coming up on the show. And we have some other things to get to as well, like the announcement of the FIFA Women's World Cup watch parties, which will be taking place in the Power and Light this summer, that Carter and I will be a part of those. So we want to talk about that with you as well. But I think we do need to start, Carter, with that game against Vancouver on Saturday. You talked to Peter Vermees after the game. We know there are times when you'll talk to Peter and he's angry, Peter. He's maybe calling his team out for a poor performance. That wasn't the Peter Vermees that you talked to after the game. What was your read on what he had to say and maybe how the team felt coming away from being so close to getting that victory but not pulling it off?
Yeah, I think that, like you said, that they were looking at the positives. He, Kellen Rowe, and Benny Failhaber were looking at some of the positives, but you could tell they're kind of down just because they had played, you know, better than they had over the past few weeks. You know, I think they showed improvement against DC United, as the team was talking about last week, and then kind of continued it into this game. Red card made it difficult for 25 minutes. But I think just the late equalizer and the nature of that, they were trying to focus on the positives, but they seem pretty down about this result. It seems like a pretty tough result considering that they were so close to managing that red card situation and getting all 3 points.
Yeah, and I think Peter Vermees strikes me as the kind of guy that he doesn't strike me. I think we've all learned that he's the kind of guy that has a read on what his team needs in a given moment. If they need a kick up the backside, he's there to deliver it. But if they need maybe a little bit of a boost or a pat on the back, he's there to deliver that as well. And I don't think he's at a point where, you know, beating the team up over maybe a little thing here or there that went wrong is going to help out in this regard. I think he saw the effort level that he wanted to see from his team, and just maybe the result wasn't there in the end. They could have done a couple things maybe to close out the game more pragmatically at the end. But I could tell he didn't want to focus on that. He wanted to focus on the things that the team did right to put themselves in a position to win the game in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Vancouver getting just the three shots on target throughout the game, despite being up a man for almost 25 minutes in the second half. And the return of Matt Beisler, I think, is a real positive. He pointed that out in the post-game presser. Or someone asked him about mm-hmm. Matt Beisler coming back, and I think you saw all the qualities that he has.
Peter Vermes said he was the top man of the game.
Yeah, and I think, obviously that's saying a lot, and Beisler reads the game so well, and I think that's something that Vermes pointed out as well about his performance against Vancouver. So good to have him back on the field, and it's just a stabilizing presence in the back as well. So, there are some positives. They got some decent shot attempts away. You look at the return of Benny Failhaber and how crucial he was in the goal, winning the ball back and immediately, shifting mm-hmm. it out and playing it up, seeing Johnny Russell in a lot of space. I thought he had a good description of that after the game, Benny Failhaber talking about that play. Of course, it's like a steel trap up there. You remember, like, remembers everything that happens on the field. You could ask him about a wayward pass from the other team in the 15th minute that didn't do anything, and he'd probably remember it. So mm-hmm. always really fascinating to hear what he has to say. And I think that, those definitely were some positives to take away from it. And then in the end, it's a tough one to swallow because you're just a couple minutes away and the ball gets recycled over to the left, and it's a guy that's unmarked in the box, and it's a good finish from him. And you saw what it meant to Vancouver, but that's the toughest part for sure.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people are pointing to the fact that at the end of that that sequence, or right before the goal scoring sequence for Vancouver, Johan Quaze tries an ambitious shot attempt from midfield to chip the keeper. 34 seconds later, you're picking the ball out of the back of your net. I will admit, watching the game, there was a brief second when he looked up and he's in the center circle and the goalkeeper is outside of the penalty area. You can see what he's thinking there. The result, though, it's not close. The goalkeeper doesn't even really have to retreat very much. It's an easy catch for him.
Oh, he doesn't catch it. He chests it
down. Yeah, he chests it down, right. And maybe that was sending a message right there. Yeah. The goalkeeper's going to say, you're not going to chip me, you know.
That's definitely a point of pride there for goalkeepers.
Yeah. And so, any game can never be pinned on one moment here or there. There's 90 minutes plus stoppage time that lead up to the circumstances, but it's one that I think that a lot of people noticed at the end of the game because, it was right before the goal. And I do think that for the Sporting Kansas City players, the other guys on the field, they're looking at it going, we've been defending for the past, really ever since the 50th minute. Because even though Vancouver got down to 10 men as well, by that point the momentum in the game had shifted. They'd been on the front foot for 20 minutes. Sporting Kansas City were trying to close out the game. You're chasing the game like crazy. You're trying to defend, and you get the ball up front, and maybe you're just hoping you can hold on to it for a little bit longer.
Yeah, and that is a moment that you would think, it's way such an ambitious effort there. Obviously, he would be the hero if it comes off, but it's just with that few minutes remaining, I think you can take it to the corner or do something else. But as you just
play it back, try to possess the ball for a little bit.
But as you said, and as Kellen Rowe brought up in postgame, there wasn't just one moment because Rowe himself pointed out a couple of times where he thought he could have done better in attack to maybe get the second goal. The momentum had shifted for Sporting and in the favor of Vancouver, but could Sporting have done more when it did go to 10-10? Could they have done a little bit more to shift it back? I don't know. And then the big moment in the second half that made them lose momentum anyways was the tackle from Christian Namath, and I think you heard from both Failhaber and Rowe that there wasn't any ill intent in the tackle, just a mistimed tackle, and then the team has to deal with that. So there's just some things that didn't go their way, and you can't really just point to the one play at the end of the game.
Yeah, and the tackle, like you said, I don't think there was any malice there from Christian Namath, but I don't think anybody would really debate after seeing it. You know, look, studs right into the ankle of Felipe.
It happened right in front of me, too. And it's kind of like, it's even if he didn't get the red initially, the referee, which I think he's done a good job in spotting it, I think that might have gone to VAR in the end because it's high up the shin. And, I mean, it's the old cliche. It's the striker's challenge. He's just desperately trying to get in there.
Yeah, and that definitely was the moment that changed the complexion of the game more than anything else. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Gianluca Busi is going to join us. We're also going to talk to Mike Flaherty, and we'll preview the upcoming match on Sunday with the Seattle Sounders as well here on the Sporting Kansas City Show.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. And we are joined now by a man who was just back with the team, rejoining the team this past weekend after playing with the U-17s at the CONCACAF Championships. Gianluca Busio is with us. What's up, Gianluca? How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We had a chance to talk to you a little bit at in the second half of the game the other night, so we can maybe rehash a little bit of that. But first of all, just tell me how things have gone since you've gotten back to town. Have you been able to kind of jump right back into things like you didn't miss a beat, or how's it been?
Well, it's my first practice back since I got back. But, I went to the game on Saturday, was it?
Yep.
Yeah, I went to the game Saturday, watched that. And, yeah, I mean, I've been with all the guys again and, you know, back like I never missed anything.
So let's talk about the competition. How different was it in terms of the day-to-day routine here, being a professional versus joining the U-17s?
It was definitely different. I mean, clearly they have to take care of us a little more than the professional, but, you know, our coaching staff, they like to treat us as professionals, so it wasn't too different from, you know, being here and being in a professional environment. So they try to kind of mimic that, so the coaching staff didn't make it that big of a difference. You know, they treated us like pros, and I thought they did a good job with that, but it was, you know, just it was kind of more jokes, I guess, because you're being with guys your age, so a lot of good friends. But, you know, it was serious when we had to, but also fun outside of, you know, soccer.
And I think you mentioned this on the broadcast. Is this a team that you've known some of these guys for some time, considering you've been around in the U.S. youth setup?
Yeah, we've been together, I mean, most of the guys for about, it's our second year together now. We started when we were, you know, young, you know, 14 years old, and we played 15 national team and now the 17. So we're all really close, and I think that's one of the big things of our group, though, how close we are. And, you know, not every national team can say that they're close with their players because there's new guys coming in. But we have the core group of players, that then we have, you know, some new guys, but they fit in right in. So it's just we're all really good friends.
Now, you mentioned that they try to kind of mimic the pro atmosphere. I mean, gosh, back in the day, if you were a U-17 player for the United States, you literally were just a high school kid.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of you, I mean, a lot of guys that are either on pro contracts or at least in academy systems with professional organizations. Was that pretty much the whole crew at that point, at least have some experience with soccer at that level?
Definitely. Every guy now on the team is either in Europe somewhere playing professional guys or in, you know, playing MLS, and most of the guys have contracts or with USL team. So, you know, I think that helps the coaches, that helps all of us, because we know how it is to be a professional and be in an environment that's professional. So, you know, he doesn't really have to teach us outside of soccer that much. So I think that's really good. And, you know, everybody is, you know, learning from a real professional environment. They're taking it down. We can all teach each other new things.
Yeah.
So you guys qualify with the win over Panama. What's the mindset going into that game? I mean, that's got to be one of the bigger games you've played in, I would assume.
Yeah, definitely. It was you win, you go to World Cup. Shouldn't have to be, you know, it speaks for itself. So, I mean, going into the game, we try to treat it as, you know, just another game, but we all had it in the back of our heads, you know, this is for a World Cup. We lose, we go home. So everybody, we prepared, I mean, as good as possible for that game, and everybody came out, you know, firing. We were all ready for it, and I think we played a really good game first and second half, and, you know, clearly it showed, and we came out on top. So I think the boys did a really good job to prepare for that, and we were all, you know, really focused and into it.
We've got Gianluca Busio here, and then, of course, we touched on this with you on the broadcast as well, but that final game, I'm sure that's not one you're going to forget anytime soon. It's your biggest rival. It's Mexico. What was the intensity like on the field? Could you feel it? Could you feel the rivalry between? Is there even at the U-17 level that animosity between the two sides?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's Mexico, USA. It doesn't. No matter the age group, it could be 15s. It doesn't matter. It's going to be, you know, big. You guys want to beat each other. You guys are rivals. So, I mean, especially being in a final, that gave it, you know, a lot more, you know, intensity. So, you know, both teams came out. And they were just we went at it from the start, and throughout the whole game it was a good battle between both of us, and, you know, unlucky for us, but it was a good fight from both teams.
You said unlucky. I mean, is that the main takeaway? We talked about, you know, a couple posts here and there. I thought you guys had the better of the play, especially in the first 90 minutes. Is that pretty much the way you feel? Is we catch a break here or there, we walk away winning that thing?
Yeah, I guess, but I also think we could have done more to win the game. I mean, obviously you create your own luck, so. I mean, we were unlucky that in that couple the first half, but we also have to take our chances there. If we, you know, put two or three in the first half, then, you know, it wouldn't have to be a game in the second half. So, but we also, I think that, I mean, it's a learning step for all of us. You know, we made the World Cup, so we know all the games are going to be like that much intensity. And, you know, obviously once we're going to work on, you know, finishing and getting those spots. And but we also have to learn how to finish out, you know, a game, you know, play a good two halves of soccer. You know, we had a good first half, but that was behind us, so we have to move on to the second half. And I thought it was even, and maybe they had the better chances in the second half, but, you know, so in the World Cup, we're going to have to put together a full performance, and I think that really helped us that game, helped us, you know, get ready for the World Cup.
The World Cup, which was going to be in Peru, but it's been rescheduled to Brazil. It's actually the first, I think, first ever youth tournament they're going to host. Mm-hmm. Is there any added excitement for it to be in Brazil? Obviously, such a huge soccer nation.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I mean, playing in the World Cup for me is going to be big, no matter where it is. But, you know, when I my main memory of a World Cup was the 2014 one, which was in Brazil, and it looked, I mean, amazing, the atmosphere there. And I know it's not going to be anything as close to that, but it's also a World Cup, and there's going to be a lot of fans because Brazil is a big soccer country. So it's going to be very, very fun, and, you know, I'm just excited for it.
Gosh, when you mentioned that, so what were you, 11 years old when that World Cup was going on?
2014, 4 years ago, 12.
11, yeah. 12 years old.
Around
I mean.
Age.
And you're watching Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi play in that World Cup. Did you even? I mean, did it even cross your mind that you'd be like, yeah, I'll be playing on the same team with those guys, you know, here in a few years?
No, I did not even think of that. I was just watching and enjoying it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's.
Does that make you stop and kind of pinch yourself a little bit just to even think about that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you go from watching guys on TV to playing with them on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, now it sounds a little cliche, but, you know, it's actually happened to me. And then,
yeah.
You know, I never thought of it that way, you know, like I'm watching these guys on the TV, and then now I'm, you know, playing right beside them on the field, which is awesome, but, you know, it's just more people I can learn from.
The thing that I remember, I'll be interested to hear what your travel ends up being like, because those guys, I mean, they were flying all over the country in Brazil. That's a massive country, so like the equivalent of flying from San Francisco to Florida back and forth every game. I'll be interested to hear, you know, how that's going to be. Will you talk to those guys at all about just like what their memories are of Brazil?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, when it gets closer to it, I'm definitely going to have a lot more questions about it, but it's kind of new to me. It hasn't really hit me that, you know, we're actually playing in a U-17 World Cup. Like, this is pretty big. So definitely once it gets to closer to the actual World Cup, I think I'll be more into it and, you know, asking more questions about it and stuff.
Got a little bit of ways to wait now, don't you? I think it's October-ish.
They haven't decided yet either. Yeah. I think October, September, one of those.
Yeah.
So once again, we're visiting with Gianluca Busio. I have a couple more questions about this U-17 thing then. I thought that yourself and Gio Reyna were two of the guys that really stood out in the tournament. He's wearing a captain's band. Everybody knows who he is. You know, his dad is obviously a prominent figure as well. But what can you tell us about him? I mean, I think he's another one of those kids that everybody's kind of looking at like, man, he could be a part of a big U.S. future. What do you know about him? What can you tell us about playing with him?
Yeah, he's I love playing with him. I played with him. I mean, he's one of my closer friends on the team, and, you know, we've grown together, and, you know, he's my roommate, so we're really, really close. And I mean, he's talented. That's how you put it. He's, you know, he's big, and he's also just as good as his feet as anybody. I mean, better than most people I've seen. So, you know, he's just a good soccer player. He's born talented, and, you know, he's powerful, and he can beat you on the dribble, but, you know, he's also looking for a pass, and that's what I mean. I like playing with him. He'll beat two guys and slip me in. So I enjoy playing with him, and our connection has grown more and more because, you know, like I said, we're really close friends and for a while now. So yeah, I think we've been. He's a, you know, great talented player.
So you could see that. Like, I think, Carter, you and I watched it. You could see the two of you had a pretty good, you know, chemistry on the field together. Yeah. You were roommates with him then,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, that's what I was.
So what's he like as a roommate? Was he got any annoying habits? You know, come on, give us something.
I don't think it was anything too bad, just because we're kind of the same. We're both messy, so I think that didn't go well together. We had to get room service a lot, or not room service, but the
housekeeping
definitely had a couple little trouble with us. But it wasn't anything too bad because we're kind of, like I said, we're the same. So it's pretty tough to get mad at something that I do.
Did you get your socks mixed up and stuff like that, because they're just all over the apartment or whatever?
Yeah.
The other question I have for you about the U-17s, and Carter, if you got more.
I do.
Compare the speed of the game to me playing in an MLS game versus playing in a U-17 CONCACAF. What's the difference like in terms of just how fast the game is happening?
Yeah, it's different, I guess, but I feel like it's also kind of similar playing at a high level U-17s. It's a lot more. I think it's just as intense, you know. The guys you're playing your guys your age, so you kind of want to prove something against, you know, show them that you know, I can do this against you guys too. So I think it's definitely, you know, especially guys like, you know, some of the better players, you don't have to, you guess you can kind of slack a little bit. You can slack a little and you can get away with it, but, you know, once we get to the World Cup, like I said, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be just like a pro game. So I don't think there's too much different about it. I mean, from when I've played them both, and I mean, I still try to treat it as a professional game, so I try not to think about, you know, who I'm playing. I'm going to go into every game playing it the same, but it's definitely, you know, it definitely has its, you know, it's, you're playing against guys your age, so I guess I have a little more confidence going into those games. Just, you know, these are my age guys, and, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, try my best no matter what. And it's somewhat similar, but I think it's also a little different in some kind of ways.
Well, as you said, once you get to the World Cup, there are going to be some top players there. I'm just looking at the countries of qualifying. Obviously, Brazil's in, the host country, Argentina, Chile, Japan, South Korea, Australia, France, Netherlands, Italy, Spain. This is going to be a really fun one. I'm looking at the other guys out of CONCACAF as well. Haiti getting in just the second time ever for them, which is a pretty cool accomplishment.
Yeah.
But Canada making it, and they've kind of got a nice little crop of youth talent. You guys had some really good games against them in the tournament. Do you think there's maybe a little bit of a rivalry developing with Canada? And what did you make of those games? The group stage game, of course. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was... I guess every team we play is going to have a little thing against us, because I think every time we go into CONCACAF, where USA and Mexico are the two big teams, but then you kind of, Canada's under there, and Haiti, Honduras are kind of right under us. So, but I think, like I said, the teams are getting better and better. Canada's growing with the youth talent. So we went into the first game of opening game. That was, I think they got the best of us in the first couple minutes, and, you know, we kind of calmed down and we got back into it. But yeah, they gave us a tough run for it. Every time we played them, they looked good out there, and it was a difficult game.
We're visiting with Gianluca Cabuccio, and look, there's no secret that for young players, when you go play an international competition like this, there are scouts. You know, the world is watching, so to speak. And you've talked openly about that, hey, someday, you know, whenever that is, you want to maybe follow in the footsteps of a player like a Tyler Adams or somebody like that. So this is a shop window for you when you're playing in something like this. Is that on your mind at all when you're on the field, or do you just put all that out and say, I'm just going to go play my game and I'm not going to worry about trying to show off what I can do to people?
No, I don't pay attention to any of that stuff outside of team we're playing against, our team, and, you know, me doing my best. You know, if I try to, you know, if I focus on my game, then after all that, you know, it's not my job really. It's the agent, all they can look into that, but it's not up to me. So my job is just go out there and play my game, and you know, if I just want to, you know, whatever team I'm on, I'm going to give my, you know, all to help them win. If then, you know, if the team's playing well, then it means you're playing well. So I think that if the team's going to play well, and that's going to help me, you know, show what I can do. And they're my brothers, really. So we're going to have to do everything together. Then we'll go, you know, after that, we'll help each other get better and go into bigger things.
What's the belief among the group about where you guys can end up in this World Cup, and maybe how did that this CONCACAF championship maybe change or affect that belief?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go in there and want to win it no matter what. I don't care who's going to be in our group and what other teams there are. We're going to go in there and want to win it. So, I mean, there's obviously tough teams in there, but, you know, we played the group of guys we have now. We've played against top teams, you know, Brazil, England. We've played all these big teams, and we've shown that we can compete, you know, with them. We got in ties, and we won some games against these big teams, so we know that we can do it. So we're going to go show out on the big stage, and hopefully we can do well.
We've got Gianluca Cabuccio here, and now you're back here, though, for the summer. And you watched the game from upstairs with us. Tell me what your feeling was like watching that game, because we all were so stunned at the end of the game. Because, yeah, you know, this was it. This was going to be the win, and then it got kind of yanked away. That had to be a tough one just to have to sit there and watch at the end for you.
Yeah, it's the way things are going right now, isn't it? It's just, you know, we're just not – luck's not falling our way right now. And I mean, obviously we can change a lot of things about that, and coming from our group, and you know, everything that's bad that can't happen is happening. So, but I think we're gonna change that. And you know, it's every team has their slumps, and I think we're in one right now. But I think with the group of guys we have, and we know what we have to do, and we've been playing better and better each game, just haven't been getting the results. But we'll, you know, the Vancouver one, that hurt. But, you know, we were controlling the game, and the red card didn't really help. But after that, we're going to go into these next games and try to change it around.
Doesn't get any easier. Seattle coming in here, yeah, Second in the West, one of the top scoring teams in the league. They've only lost one game all season. What have you guys seen from Seattle so far?
Yeah, they're one of the top teams in the MLS. They've shown well. They've, you know, show that they can play. They score goals, and you know, they're pretty good defensively. And you know, I know a couple of the U17 guys on Seattle, and you know, they're all enjoying it there. Obviously, it's all fun and games when you're winning and stuff. So they all enjoy it there, and they've been getting minutes too. So I think it's gonna be pretty cool to see them. And yeah, like I said, Seattle, they're a really good team, but we know what we have to do, and hopefully we can pull out a win.
Well, I know that the team is happy to have you back. The last thing, you know, Ty, I have to ask you to kind of tie it all together. You know, hearing from Peter Vermees, you know, he said that it was really important for him to have you and Tyler Freeman go play with the U-17s, even though, let's be honest, they could have used you guys here, right? I mean, you know, they fielded a couple of 15-man, you know, lineups while you guys were out. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you and Tyler both, maybe, to play for an organization that, even though it might hurt them in the short term, knows that it's better to have you get those opportunities to go play at a competition like this?
Yeah, I think it just shows the confidence and, you know, trust they have in us. They want to see us do big things, and they want us to get better. And, you know, even if it's not helping them in the short term, it's helping us in the long term. And, I mean, that shows that they want, you know, they know we're young, and they know that these tournaments and playing with guys your age is really important for your development. So I think they know what they're doing, and you know, I trust them, and I want them to trust in me. And you know, it was a decision that they made, and you know, I kind of went along with it. So I'm obviously happy that, you know, I got to go and you know, qualify World Cup with them. But you know, also I wanted to be here and help the team. So obviously it was their decision, and you know, it's you know, we have a good relationship between the coaching staff and all of them. So you know, we're trusting them, and yeah, we believe in each other.
Well, it's good to have you back, Gianluca. Thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on the great competition there, and welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's Gianluca Cabuccio. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with the kit man. Mike Flaherty is going to join us, a little more behind-the-scenes action for you on the Sporting Kansas City Show.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
Sporting Kansas City Show continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB, on the podcast, on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you listening. Our thanks to Gianluca Cabuccio for joining us in the last segment, and really the only man we could find to top a 16-year-old phenom who just came back from being a hero at the U-17s is Kitman.
Yes, and no one's listening to this then.
Mike Flair. It's, you know, look, it's big shoes to fill, but we got Kitman, Mike Flaherty here. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. We're, Carter and I, trying to, show people different aspects of the organization through the course of the year. And I don't want to intimidate you, but the likes of Dan Lawley, you know, have been on the show.
Right.
I'm trying to think who we had, Mateus on the show.
Yep.
But obviously we're scraping the bottom of the barrel now.
Very bottom. Actually, the outside of the barrel at the very bottom.
But I think you might have the biggest cult following of anybody behind the scenes here at Sporting Kansas City.
It's definitely a cult, yes. Yeah.
So
it's Kool-Aid.
You know what, though? I don't know how many people know how you got here, you know, like maybe the backstory. Have you told the backstory much to people about, you know, like what, you know, who is Mike Flaherty and how you got to this situation?
I have told that backstory. Just people stop listening after like 15 minutes of me talking, typically. So,
you're from Montana.
I'm from Montana. I grew up in Montana, and played soccer the 3 months out of the year where there wasn't snow. So, just always have been a soccer guy. Went to college, played soccer, ended up working with Project 40 out of Montana. When I was in Montana, I worked with U.S. Soccer's Project 40, where basically I just traveled out as an administrator and ran the team. The general manager just happened to live in Montana at a ranch, just knew me from stuff I'd done putting together tournaments in Montana. So called me up one day and said, hey, you want to come and help us out? And I said, sure. And I went on the road, and the first thing he had me do was some laundry and then call players and make sure that every trip went. And it was probably the craziest soccer job I ever had.
Yeah?
Because we basically played in the USL. We took a spot of a team that had dropped out. So they put Project 40 in there. The intention was to have like 80 players, you know, and we'd have these 40 people these 80 people we could pick from, and players on each coast that were already in the MLS. So they trained with teams, and then we would call them up. We'd usually play midweek and on the weekend. And bring them in, and we'd play a USL game and then send them back home. And so sometimes we had some of the craziest rosters. We had one team that we started all left-footers, including the goalkeeper. I mean, when has that ever happened?
Yeah. Peter's gotten close.
That you're talking Peter's language.
Right,
he likes the left-footers.
Peter's close. I, I actually dressed for, I think, 15 minutes over the 7 years that we were there because we had to have so many guys on the bench or we got fined.
Yeah? And did you ever get in?
I did. I got an assist, actually. Just whacked the ball to the backup goalkeeper in a game. So that was pretty interesting. we were scraping the bottom of the barrel is exactly what was happening there. But it was, I loved it. It was a great job, but it was crazy. We were all over the place. I was home maybe 2 days a week.
What years are we talking here?
It was, that's a great question, too. 97, I think, is when I started with that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And that's when it was Nike, is that?
Yeah, it was Nike U.S. Project 40. Yep.
Yeah.
So I was a Nike guy then, towed that company line. So I technically worked for, my boss worked for the MLS, I worked for U.S. Soccer. So they would send me on random trips with the national teams. So I always got the U14 boys camp. I don't remember what it was, 15s, I think, that would always go down to Mexico. So it always goes to those two camps, and then sometimes I get the 20s here or there. If there was a trip, someone got sick or hurt, they'd bring me in because the USL season wasn't that long. So I was always available for those kind of things.
So how did you end up, though, coming to Kansas City?
I was playing, and I decided to go try out in Canada and played a couple teams back in the CSL. And never really stuck on there, so started coaching because then it gave me people that had to play with me. Right? Like you have friends that have to be there. So I started coaching soccer, and I got to play with, you know, and grow up or teach these kids, and that was fun. So I liked it and kind of stuck with it. And one day someone from my old Project 40 days kind of hit me up and said, hey, it was crazy. I was I'd gone through paramedic school and was working on a truck down in Florida, and the guys that were on my truck were retired Chicago firefighters. And they were like, hey, you got to sign up for Facebook. It's the greatest thing ever. And I was like, I'm not going to sign up for Facebook. You know, social media is dumb. And I signed up because after, you know, we were having beers at 7 o'clock in the morning when we got off shift. So after, you know, three or four more, I signed up. And they told me what to do. I just went after all the people that I worked with U.S. Soccer at, kind of looked them all up. And the next day, someone wrote to me and said, hey, send me a resume. And I did. And literally 20 minutes later, Peter called me. And I had no idea what he wanted the resume for. He said, oh, there's a job opening in Kansas City. So I interviewed, thinking that I was interviewing for the administration job.
And then he said afterwards he's going to put me on the phone with Rick Dressel, who's the administrator. So I talked to Rick, and I said, well, where are you moving to? What are you doing now? Are you moving up the ladder? What's going on? And he said, no, I'm not going anywhere. And I said, so why? What is this interview about? And they said, it's being a equipment manager. I was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So then I kind of ended it there, and Peter called me back and kind of talked me into it. So here I am.
Wow. When was that?
That was 2009.
2009.
Mm-hmm. And so, I remember driving from Florida. By the way, I was living in Florida. I drove from Florida, and I got to about Illinois or whatever it was, and it was snowing sideways, and I thought, this is why I left Montana. I don't know if I want to do this. I think I cried all the way through until I got to Kansas City. So
that's incredible. From Montana to Florida to Kansas City.
Yeah, I've been
and
around.
Now you've been here for 10 years.
Yes, this is my 11th season.
Wow. So you've basically been here from the start of the Peter Vermees era.
Yes, I was here with just before he took over. Yep.
Okay.
It was that year.
And it was the cab. You got here when it was the minor league baseball stadium.
That's right. That's right. That was interesting. It was interesting.
I mean, how much has the job changed for you? We every person we have in here that's been around for any amount of time, one of the biggest topics to cover is how much has your job changed?
Immensely.
Yeah.
Mostly the number of people that we basically serve. We oversee now, all the teams, all the academy teams, the Swope Park Rangers, and even these teams that come in. We oversee them as well.
Has your staff changed then because of that?
Yes,
have more people that answer to you and all that over time.
I do. I don't know if they ever answer, but there's more people work with me. So I have the Swope Park Rangers is Andy Garay. I have Joe Gensuso with the academy, and then Sammy Jackson with me and the full team.
And people have seen you guys and your hijinks on social media, I think.
Yes, hijinks is exactly what they are.
I mean, you just got, with Sammy, you just have unlimited material.
Always. There's always material there. Yeah. I don't know what he's saying half the time. Well, I will say this, though. We just got an Alexa device in our office, and it understands him perfectly.
Wow.
I have no idea how, but he'll run through the room and he'll yell something like, Alexa, talk about it. And it does what it asks him to. I think it does. I don't even know. Maybe it's not doing what he asked.
Yeah,
but
you don't know.
He just goes with it and acts like that's what he meant to say.
Yeah, yeah. It's always Thai music, so I guess he's doing it right. I don't know. I have no idea.
Sammy is one of the biggest characters, I think, in the, like, he's hilarious.
He's a character for sure.
Yeah.
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 Yep.
So, and our kids go to the same school, so sometimes, you know, we'll see each other at the drop-off line and things like that. But, I mean, Kansas City, for a person who grew up in Montana and was living in Florida, did you know much about Kansas City before you got here? And did you ever anticipate that this is the kind of place you'd be, like, raising a family? You know?
I never said I would be. If you'd asked me when I lived in Montana, first of all, I never thought I'd leave Montana at one point, but then it became pretty clear that if I wanted to do something with soccer, I had to get out of there. But Kansas City wasn't – I'd been offered the job, actually, the same job, years ago. And I turned it down because Kansas City wasn't really in my plans at the time. Plus, I wanted to go coach. So I went off coaching and didn't even pursue it. And then it came back around. So maybe it was destined.
Yeah.
You know?
So over your time here, who have been some of your favorite players that you've worked with in Kansas City?
Well, Claudio Lopez is one of my favorite guys when he came in. It's always kind of the foreign guys. It's funny because they're the guy. I mean, you know, Jimmy Conrad, I have a good relationship with him. I talk to him all the time. He's not foreign, but, I mean, he can be.
He's from a different planet.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He's from a completely different planet.
Completely different planet is correct. there's just a lot of guys that have been through that have been, you know, that I've had a good relationship with that I've kept in touch with. You know, Zoltán Hercegfalvy, which is kind of a random one from Hungary. He's a guy that I still keep in touch with today and still talk to. It's the kind of guys who just came in here the European guys, I guess, understand the role of the kit man a little bit more, too. It's not just the gym teacher handing out gear. So they come in and they'll have a conversation with me. And, you know, the Hungarians always come in and have coffee in the morning and chill out in the office and talk a little bit. So that's just part of it. I mean, part of the culture is for them is, you know, interacting with the staff. So
we're once again visiting with Mike Flaherty, a.k.a. Kitman. You like to talk about the fact that your main job is preventing nudity on the field. Mm-hmm. What's the weirdest or craziest thing you've had to do in the course of a game to help a guy out, if whether it was a piece of broken equipment or, you know, a wardrobe malfunction of some sort, something like that?
We've had to kind of jerry-rig shoes a few times, poke holes in different places and resew them up. But once you get used to that, that one's kind of easy. I've had to help guys change shorts in the middle of a game, which is interesting because you got to kind of do it by the bench. And that one's a good one. So
yeah,
because first of all, these guys just don't care if they're naked. That's one thing I've noticed.
If I had a body like that, I think I'd want to walk around naked all the time too.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe
you got to show it off.
Yeah, I don't want to see it though necessarily.
Right.
Like
right.
You know, then it makes me feel bad about myself. So I don't really need that. But yeah, they're naked a lot, actually.
The two populations of guys that don't mind being naked, apparently the old man at the gym,
right?
That guy doesn't mind at all.
And I'm almost there.
Yeah.
So
Okay. That's like maybe
it'll all come around.
Yeah. Might have some overlap in the Venn diagram here.
I'm getting close to that, the old man at the gym.
This is the dumbest question but I've always wondered it, and I feel like you might be the person to ask. Anytime I'm watching a soccer game, it doesn't matter where it is, a professional soccer game, the guys are warming up, jogging up and down the sideline, and they're getting ready. The coach calls him over to come into the game, and sometimes they're like, hey, hurry up, we got to get you in. And he comes over, and he has to take his shirt off that he's been wearing, and then he has to put a jersey on to go out onto the field. Why aren't they just wearing the jersey in the first place?
You know, that's a great question, and I've asked that question a few times. There are guys who wear their jersey to warm up. Right when they walk on the field, they put the jersey on. Other guys don't, and it's funny to, like, another thing that is weird about that, I don't know if it's a superstition thing, but subs will wear the vest to warm up. As soon as the game's over, watch the bench and guys shed that vest and throw it on the ground. Like that vest is weighing them down. I mean, it doesn't weigh anything. It's a mesh vest.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is take it off. I don't know if it's just a thing of having to have been on the bench and you don't want to be recognized that. I don't know what it is. But I think it has to do with some superstition on most parts of it. Some parts of it, I just maybe don't want to get the jersey dirty. I don't know. But every single guy, there's like not every single guy.
Yeah.
There's maybe one or two guys who always wear their jersey. The rest of it, it's a whole ordeal to get the guys dressed on the pitch. And especially when Peter wants them out there right then.
Yeah.
Then there's a lot more yelling and it's a lot more stress trying to dress a dude at the sidelines. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Speaking of superstitions, have there been any guys that have come through with like weird ones that you have to help out with in terms of the gear and stuff?
Well, Jimmy Nielsen always had a hole in his undershirt, and it was in the armpit. And we had the undershirt. I had to like sew pieces of it together just so we could get that thing through the whole season. That one was, that was crazy.
He only wanted
to wear that one undershirt, and he wore it the whole time he was here.
So in the hole, just you had to sew it back together. He didn't want the hole there. He just wanted that undershirt.
He left the hole there.
Okay.
He didn't care about that. That's how he knew it was his.
Okay.
But like the seam on the bottom started to fall off. I had to stitch that up a couple times. Just things like that.
Lucky.
Just to kind of, the lucky shirt.
Yeah.
Lucky shirt was one.
Have you ever had a guy that's like, don't wash my stuff, I want to keep it dirty?
No, never had that. Thank God.
That's good.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't go so well. No, I haven't had that one. Benny's got lucky shin guards. That one's a... we lost one of them one time, so that was great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because he's not loud or anything.
he was just really cool about it. Just didn't make a big deal at all.
Really calm about it. Pretty simple. First thing he said to me when he came back, hey, here are my shin guards. Don't lose them this time, kind of thing.
Did you find the one that you lost, or was it just gone for good?
No, I think what happened is it got just thrown in the laundry with the towels at some stadium, and we didn't ever get it back. So.
Wow. Okay, well, let's hope you keep the shin guards this time.
Yeah,
very
that's
important
the key
stuff.
To everything, I think.
That's right.
Right.
Well, hey, we're out of time, but we appreciate you sitting down with us. Maybe we'll share some more stories again sometime soon.
Anytime.
That is the Kit Man, Mike Flaherty. We'll take a break. Back to wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
And we wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show with a little peek ahead on Sunday against Seattle Sounders, Sporting Kansas City, and at Children's Mercy Park. This is the second game of a three-game homestand for SKC. It's going to be on national television on FS1, so myself and Carter Augustine will be doing the radio-exclusive broadcast of that game right here on Sports Radio 810 on Sunday. And, Carter, look, Seattle are doing it a little differently. Maybe Sporting Kansas City and Seattle can flip-flop their situations here, where Seattle have had these slow starts at the beginning of the season, then made big runs at the end of the season to make runs into the playoffs. It's Seattle that's the team that's off to the hot start this year, and Sporting Kansas City are the team that are going to have to really turn things up in the summertime.
Yeah, and usually you see Seattle making like a big move in the summer, right around you know, July or August. That kind of gets their fortunes turned around. But they have started this season so brilliantly. They've got Jordan Morris back healthy. Seems like they have, you know, most of their guys back, and so it's the continuity, I think, that's really helping this Seattle Sounders team out. They've lost just once all season long, and it was to LAFC. So I think that shows you how good this team is. I think they're getting Jovan Jones back as well, which is a huge boost for them for the rest of their season. That's a very deep fullback roster now that they have. Maybe they can't keep Brad Smith this offseason or in the summer, but that's a big boost for them as well. And Nico Lodero leading the league in assists with Carlos Vela. They're scoring a ton of goals. They just have the one loss, as I said. I mean, this is a very difficult challenge for Sporting, that's for sure. But just talked to Ilya here, and he says that, you know, having the home field advantage is a big one for this one.
Yeah, well, and Seattle have had a home-heavy schedule so far. They've played 8 games at home. They played just 5 games on the road. They're 1-1-3 away from home, so they have been able to, you know, grind out some draws.
Yeah.
And obviously that's not what Sporting Kansas City are looking for in this one. They want to try to get 3 points and get things headed in the right direction. So it will be a big challenge, and of course, as we talked about earlier, Sporting's going to be doing it without Christian Namath, so it's going to be interesting to see who plays in that number 9 spot.
That's got
to
be the biggest question, right?
Yeah. I mean, Shallowy's been injured.
Yep.
Obviously, Hurtado's injured. We've seen Quaze play there for Sporting Kansas City. He might be the most logical answer right now, but we're going to have to wait and see. That's going to be a big question for Sporting.
Yeah, I think that's the big question, is who's going to replace Christian Namath for this particular game, and that's what remains to be seen. We're not doing the call, Nate, but we've got a pretty fun thing on Sunday regardless out at Hollywood Casino that I think people should try and go out there. We've got a Facebook Live, Roger Espinoza on the men's, and he'll be joining us at Hollywood Casino. Should be a really fun event just before the game.
Yeah, the pre-match show at Hollywood Casino. You can get all the details at sportingkc.com. A Memorial Day weekend celebration prior to the game. Facebook Live pre-match coverage begins at 3 o'clock. A meet and greet with Roger Espinoza, food and drink specials at the Turn 2 Lounge, free parking and shuttle from Hollywood Casino to Children's Mercy Park, and casino game play all day long. You got to be 21 or older to attend, but yeah, come on out. That would be great. So, again, you can get all your details at sportingkc.com, which also we only have a little bit of time left to talk about this. Sporting Kansas City also announced 2026 World Cup watch parties in the Power and Light District. Look, last time the women won the World Cup, we had those watch parties. The place was absolutely packed. It was a party. We know the last time the U.S. men were in the World Cup, those were amazing as well. And you and I are going to be a part of it, Carter. Those are going to be a lot of fun coming up in June.
Really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to the World Cup as well. I think this is going to be I'm hoping it's the best ever for the Women's World Cup.
I think it will be.
I think it will be. In France, they seem to be getting behind their team. Some really, really great venues that this will be at, and I think the European women's game is getting better. I mean, they've had some powerhouses throughout the years, obviously, but it seems like they're getting better and better.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that translates to the atmosphere in the stadiums. And I mean, obviously, we saw such a wonderful atmosphere in Vancouver when the women won it. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to this. Got Thailand, Chile, and Sweden, and the big watch parties down at Power and Light should be a lot of fun, including, I think, a Father's Day watch party, if I'm not mistaken.
It's going to be awesome. So you can get all the details there at sportingkc.com as well. Australia is my dark horse for the World Cup. Obviously, we're all rooting for the United States, and I'm saying outside of that, that's a little pick for you right there. Had a chance to watch them closely when they were here for the Tournament of Champions last summer, and they got experience. And they got talent. And you put those two things together, it could be good. That's going to do it for us. We're out of time here. The Sporting
you
Kansas City Show. Who's your dark horse? Who you got?
Go ahead. Get a pick in here.
Who you got? Give me a dark horse.
I don't have a dark horse. I have the host country. I think France is going to do it, and I think the European teams are going to show well.
It's just going to be like 1998 when the French men won it in in their home country as well. The Champs-Élysées will be packed and celebratory. Now, is that good enough?
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take it to break on that note. Thanks again to Gianluca Busio and Mike Flaherty for joining us on the show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week again right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show.